Välkomna till det här passet som handlar om domännamn både i Sverige och i Europa och, ja, och framförallt i Europa. Det är så då att det är fyra talare på det här och varav en just kraxade in sig och sa att hon inte kunde, ja, hon kunde inte prata, så det är Elisabeth Ekstrand som utgår. Som skulle prata om ATF, alltså om tvistlösningen. Jag kanske ska säga, jag heter Per-Olof Josefsson, jobbar på Nick SC. Och vi ska börja här och berätta lite om svenska förhållanden. Och det blir på svenska och resten av den här tillställningen då blir det på engelska med Giovanni Seppia som är ordförande i Center. Det är inte riktigt rätt, utan snarare general manager för. Och då nickar de här på. Och sen är det Mark van Weselmal. Was that name right? I believe so. Even if it's not there. Som kommer att prata med Jurid. Resten av tiden. Och då är det så också att när det gäller .eu så kommer det vara en större tillställning på biografen Skandia på onsdag. Om man vill veta mer om alla detaljer. Både teknik och annat. Det var det. Ska man säga något mer, Bo Erik? Eller? Nej. Då lämnar jag över till Annette som får berätta lite om vad vi pysslar med här i Sverige.
Tack.
På .se.
Ja, jag tror jag hörs. Vill jag börja med att säga god morgon och hälsa er välkomna till morgons första pass här idag. Jag tänkte inleda med en presentation av Nick.se och .se. Ge lite domännamnstatistik, hur det ser ut just nu under .se. Numeriska domännamn, det är nytt. Från och med februari så blir det möjligt att registrera siffror. Enda siffror i domännamn, vilket är lite spännande. IDN steg 2. IDN steg 1 innebar att vi fick fler nya tecken i domännamn. Och då var det Å, Ä, Ö, tyst I och E, accent. Och nu tänkte jag ge er lite info om vad steg 2 innebär. Nytt produktionssystem tänkte jag prata lite grann om. Och HOIS, en del förändringar där. Och slutligen DNSSEC. Mitt namn är Annette Hall och jag är ansvarig på domänavdelningen på Nick.se. Så här ser Nick.se ut. Vi har vår vd Per-Olof Josefsson som just nu inledde. Ansvarig för säkerhet och utredningar Ann-Marie Eklund Lövinder. Slavserverdriftsansvarig är Torbjörn Karlsson. Och ekonomichef Monica Lönnros. Och på teknikavdelningen så har vi ansvarig teknisk chef Stefan Lindqvist. Och vår styrelse, där har vi Olof Hallström, Rolf Berntsson och Robert Malmgren. Nick.se är ett helägt dotterbolag till II-stiftelsen, Internetinfrastrukturstiftelsen. Och stiftelsen ansvarar för .se-domänen. Vi sköter den dagliga driften, registrerar domänen och har hand om den dagliga verksamheten när det gäller domännamn. Lite statistik. Här kan ni se ifrån juli månad fram till nu i oktober. Och det är då antalet nyregistreringar de sista senaste 90 dagarna. Då. Och det ligger ungefär på en 350 registreringar per dag. Det är så här att vi har ett automatiserat gränssnitt så att det tickar in hela tiden nya registreringar även under helger. Så att de små staplarna är helgerna då. Men ett snitt på ungefär 350 registreringar per dag ligger vi på. Jämfört med 2004 så kan man se att det är en ökning. Det ligger på i stort sett en ökning över hela den här perioden då, det här är veckovis fram till nu ungefär. Och Så det ser ju bra ut. Det är kul. Här har vi en diagram på antalet registreringar per månad. Och då kan man se att det snittar på ungefär 10 000 registreringar per månad. Och sen har vi en del avregistreringar också. Och det är lite ojämnt fördelat. Lite beroende på vad vi har för toppar, om det så att vi går ut med till exempel en stor avisering, en puckel. Vi hade en stor puckel när vi släppte reglerna fria. Och det genererade ofta lite fler avregistreringar året därpå. Men det här snittar väl på ungefär 1800 avregistreringar. Då kommer vi till numeriska domännamn. Nu är det alltså tillåtet att registrera då endast siffror i domännamn. Och det blir möjligt från och med den 1 februari 2006. Och tittar man då historiskt, så finns det en standard, en RFC 1035, som säger att man inte rekommenderar att registreras endast siffror i domännamn. Och det har olika skäl anges för att inte då tillåta endast siffror i domännamn. Och exempelvis risken att domännamn kan förväxlas då med IP-adresser eller hantering av telefonnummer med anledning av enum. Också svårigheten att skydda registrering av siffror som utgör telefonnummer eller andra identifierare. Men med tiden så har de här reglerna liberaliserats. Och det är många andra toppdomäner som tillåter endast siffror i domänen. Så RFC 1035 är föråldrad. Och de här problemen som man tidigare har pekat på, de kvarstår inte längre. Vilket har gjort att vi även har tittat nu på möjligheten att då få igång det här under .se. Tittar man ute i vår omvärld, så ser man att det enda generella kravet egentligen är att man har då ett minimiantal tecken på 2 eller 3. En rundfråga till andra CCTLD:er. Svar från 30 stycken andra toppdomäner har 23 stycken, tillåter då 23 stycken nummer endast i domänen. Tittar man då på antalet registrerade domänen totalt hos de här toppdomänerna, så utgör det bara 1% numeriska domänen. Så det är en ganska begränsad mängd domänen som vi också kan förvänta oss. Vi kommer ta hänsyn till vissa särskilt skyddsvärda sifferkombinationer nu när vi inför nummer. Och då har vi tittat bland annat på att spärra 11-serien. Och det är då en del telefonnummer som PTS hanterar, och de har också tilldelning av de här 11-serienumren. Och de kommer också få en möjlighet att registrera de här domännamnen så småningom. Och det kan vara då typ 112, känner ni till. Det finns andra sådana här korta nummer som 117 för sjukvård och så vidare. Och efter 117 så kommer det då X och Y, alltså flera siffror därefter, som då blir olika anknytningar. Eller telefonnummer, ska jag säga. Sen har vi postgirokontot, 90-konton för 90-konton och bankgirokonton. Och det här är då SFI, Stiftelsen för insamlingskontroll, som har ett önskemål om att vi spärrar de här speciella 90-kontorna och bankgirokontorna som handlar om insamlingar, typ Radiohjälpen, och det finns många sådana här konton då. Och de kommer bli direkt hårt spärrade. De kommer man inte kunna registrera framöver. Likaså blir det med 90 000 för nödsamtal. Det numret lever ju lever kvar lite grann, trots att det är 2. Så den har vi valt att spärra. 90-160, 90-165 för texttelefoniförmedling, förselskadade och talhandikappade kommer spärras. samt personnummer. Och där har vi då valt att spärra, eller egentligen systemet kommer känna av om det är ett personnummer. Så är det någon som försöker söka ett domännamn som liknar ett personnummer, så känner systemet av och så blir då ett felmeddelande. Och det är då kanske den mest effektiva namnidentifieraren vi har i Sverige. Och därför har vi då valt att spärra det. Och det är egentligen den åtgärden som vi gör nu inför den här övergången till att det nu blir möjligt med bara siffror i domännamn. Och är det så att det är någon som känner att man har gjort intrång i deras rättigheter eller registrerat ett domännamn i ond tro med tanke på ett varumärke eller något liknande, så får man vända sig till ATF som är ett alternativt tvistelösningsförfarande som IIS då håller i. Vi ser inte att det kommer att komma speciellt många ärenden dit. Men det är den vägen, precis på sedvanligt vis som vi hanterar ärenden idag. Dit får man gå då. IDN steg 2. Som jag sa innan, så IDN steg 1, det var då en möjlighet att registrera andra tecken än A till Z 0 till 9 och bindestreck som är kutym på internet. Här har man då möjlighet att registrera Å, Ä, Ö, tyst Y och Exang i Sverige under .se idag. IDN steg 2. Här har vi då möjlighet nu ska erbjudas att registrera domännamn på de i Sverige enligt lag fastställda officiella minoritetsspråken. Det är steget. Och det är samiska, finska, tornedalsfinska, romani och jiddisch. Och Nikkese planerar att och förbereder införande med mål att kunna ta emot och registrera någon gång under 2006. Och det är då som ett led i mångkulturåret under 2006. Vi har inga datum än. Vi har också diskussioner som inleds med våra grannländer för att söka en samnordisk enighet om vad som är svenska tecken. Och vi samarbetar med Punkt Museum som är mycket intresserad av IDN i stort. HIS. Där har det skett en del förändringar under 2005. Och HIS då, det är en väg som en sökmöjlighet ska jag säga. Som många toppdomäner använder, även de generiska toppdomänerna använder, för att kunna se information om ett domännamn. Status till exempel när domännamnet blir registrerat, vem som är innehavare. Och vem som är innehavare beror lite grann på om det är en privatperson eller om det är ett företag. Då visar det lite olika mycket. Och här har vi då gjort så att vi har dragit ner på, vi har begränsat informationen i HIS. Och nu det är endast ett minimum av information som lämnas vid en enkel slagning. Och vill man ha mer information så kan man då med hjälp av lösenord, så vi har krånglat till det lite, chatcha heter den här testen då. Och det känner ni säkert till, vid andra tillfällen har ni sett att man måste då tyda då siffror eller bokstäver för att kunna få mer information. Och det här är då en möjlighet för oss att då skydda Nikkeses kunddatabas och motverka då maskinella sökningar. För i och med att man måste titta på vad det är för sifferkombination lösenord, så är det en människa som måste vara bakom. Sen har vi ett nytt produktionssystem. Jag vill nämna lite grann om det för att det är ett av de större projekten inom Nikkeses historia. Och det är så att stora delar av Nikkese idag arbetar i det här projektet Nytt produktionssystem. Och vi ska då ta fram ett nytt produktionssystem som är EPP-baserat. Och vi eftersträvar ett mer flexibelt system än det vi har idag. Och det ska vara betydligt enklare och gå betydligt snabbare och införa nya funktioner och tjänster. Och det här ser vi då ska underlätta både för vi som arbetar i vardagen på Nikesse, men också då ge fördel till våra ombud. Vi har över 360 ombud idag. Och för våra kunder. Den första etappen ska vara klar i slutet av september 2006. När vi tittar då på olika typer av tjänster som vi kan införa eller funktioner, så tittar vi på waitlist, bokning, portfölj för samtliga innehavare, kortbetalning med mycket, mycket, mycket mer. Och det här är ingenting som vi har bestämt ännu, om det kommer bli så här, men mer bara för att visa er vad vi jobbar med då. Waitlist är ett sätt att kunna ett domännamn. Bokning är en möjlighet för våra ombud att kunna reservera eller boka ett namn i inväntan på att få in en betalning från en kund. Portfölj för samtliga innehavare är en möjlighet att, i och med att vi har nya regler, man kan ha möjlighet att kunna registrera hur många domännamn som helst i stort sett, så har man nu möjlighet att då kunna se vilka domännamn har jag. Det kanske låter lite märkligt att man inte har koll på sina domännamn, men en del har väldigt många domännamn, och då är det här en tjänst som hjälper till. Där man snabbt själv egentligen då kan gå in och titta i sin portfölj. Och så kortbetalning är någonting som vi också tittar vidare på. Och så slutligen DNSSEC. .se, den första toppdomänen i världen att införa DNSSEC. Och det är en säkrare teknik för namnuppslagning på internet. Och det är väldigt skoj att kunna få meddela eller informera om detta. Men som sagt, det räcker inte att bara .se-zonen och domännamnsinnehavaren kan hantera den här DNSSEC, utan dessutom måste då användarnas namnservrar nu kunna hantera den här tekniken. Och det ligger ett fortsatt jobb framöver här som kommer pågå under lång tid. Och internetleverantörerna då måste då vara insatta i och förbereda för DNSSEC för innehavarna. Och vi på Nikesse kommer jobba också väldigt mycket i administrativa rutiner, och vi kommer förmodligen kanske till nästa år här på internetdagen att ge lite mer information om hur det går med DNSSEC. Men för er som är lite, så kan ni gå in på vår hemsida, och sen kan ni också skicka mejl med frågor till vår projektledare som Ann-Marie Eklund Lövinder. Med det så tackar jag.
Tack så mycket. Jaha,
hallå.
Är det någon som har frågor till Ann-Marie om? Och då kommer från Norge.
Ja, från norsk registrering. Så. Nei, jeg er litt interessert i det dere gjør med numeriske domennene, fordi at du sier at for så vidt den RFC-en er foreldet, og jeg er da interessert i, har dere gjort noen tekniske tester av at det her forvekslingen med IP-nummer ikke lenger er et problem?
Jeg tror jeg kan prate ut den.
Vi har inte gjort några tester med vetligen utav detta.
Mm. Jag tror vi litar rätt mycket på de 23 andra länderna som vi har kört. Ja. Och hade det varit något problem så hade man sett det. Men det är pragmatiskt.
Ja, det är för så vitt det vi har sett när vi har spurt lite runt där, att så vitt vi har grejat finnut så har det inte varit någon som egentligen faktiskt har testat det här, men det är ingen som har uppdagat någon stor katastrof minst det. Jeg lurte også litt på, dere driver jo, eller har drevet et enumprosjekt, driver fremdeles. Og jeg så du nevnte som et moment det her med at folk kan sammenblande det her med jeg har registrert telefonnummeret mitt under .se, hvorfor virker ikke voice-over-IP-tjenesten min? Vad har ni tänkt att göra för att på många måter försöka få fram budskap så tydligt som möjligt att det här är faktiskt två olika ting?
Det blir ju informationer som vi kommer gå ut med. På vår hemsida, till våra ombud framförallt, för det är de som förmedlar mycket av informationen till våra kunder. Då. Mm. Det
ja, nej, för det är en utfordring knyttet till akkurat den. Så sista spørsmålet om nummerdomänen, och det är lite vad slags övergångsmekanism har ni tänkt er när det öppnar först i kvärn eller?
Vi kommer inte ha någon typ av sunrise, utan vi sätter ett datum och vi sätter ett klockslag när det börjar närma sig, och sen öppnar vi för registrering.
Ja. Tack.
Ja, varsågod.
Det är en bedömning hur stort intresset är. Det finns en del aktörer som är väldigt intresserade av det. Speciellt nummer, upplysningstjänster. Ja, det har vi.
Fortsatt fråga om numeriska domännamn. Ens telefonnummer idag, jag vet inte om man äger det själv eller det är den operatören som egentligen äger det som man utnyttjar, men har man en rättighet i det här telefonnumret man har, alltså det kan vara mobilnummer eller fastnummer eller något annat, och en del nummer är ju väldigt attraktiva där. Måste jag som företag och privatperson nu kolla att eller registrera det här eller vad händer?
Du kan ju registrera ditt telefonnummer om du vill. Det är som det är på den här fina rollapsen här. Så att det är ju möjligt.
Men vad händer om jag har ett väldigt, om jag har Taxi Stockholms telefonnummer till exempel, och sen glömmer man registrera ett sådant nummer och någon annan hugger på det? Ja.
Då blir det som jag visade här tidigare då, att man får gå via ATF om man känner att någon har registrerat ett namn som gör intrång på ens egen varumärke eller företagsnamn på något sätt.
Mm. Har vi någon mer fråga?
Jag har
det. Det är så.
Ja, man kan inte registrera personnummer, men hur blir det med bolagsregistreringsnummer?
Där har vi inte satt någon spärr, utan har man ett organisationsnummer så kan man ju då givetvis registrera det. Och skulle det bli på samma sätt där, att man registrerar ett organisationsnummer som någon annan anser att ja, men det där är mitt organisationsnummer, så får man då tvista om det här. Och det gäller ju många sifferkombinationer. En sifferkombination kan ju utgöra någon annans sifferkombination i något annat läge, så att säga. Så att siffror i sig är oftast inte registrerade som varumärken endast siffror hos PR, utan ofta så lägger man till text. Så det, man har inte heller den rättigheten när det gäller bara siffror. Så det blir svårare att kunna hävda i ATF då.
Ja.
Vad händer om någon är dum nog och vill registrera sitt personnummer?
Vi har lagt in då en spärr nu, att om man söker ett personnummer, vilket som helst, så går det inte. För att systemet känner av sifferkombinationerna.
Ja, men om någon skulle vilja ha sin, får man driva jobbet att släppa lös det då? Eller?
Nej, det är helt spärrat.
Det är helt spärrat.
Ja. Men du kan, den spärren som ligger inne nu, det är i form av, som mitt personnummer 631127-02. Du kan ju ta 1963. Den är inte spärrad. Eller om du väljer att ta bort bindestrecket. Utan det är bara exakt så som personnumret är skrivet i allmänhet då, med bindestreck som är spärrat.
Tack, ett spørsmål till från Norge. Jag kommer från PT, alltså från tillsvarende PTS. Spørsmål på 100, alltså 11-serien, nødserie. Dere brukar ju 112 som nødnummer. I Norge har vi fremdeles 110, 112 och 113, ikke et fellesnummer. Men det kan väl hende det blir 112 etter hvert for oss også. Men du sa att du hade spärrat den serien.
Ja.
Men där kan man ju gott tänka sig att det är dedikerat till de som driver med nödtjänste och att det bara kan vara de som får det.
Ja, det är så. Ja, det är så det är.
Ja, okej.
Alltså den är spärrad för PTS.
Ja.
Och så vill då SOS Alarm, förmodligen vill de det, använda 112.se, göra en hemsida och informera, så är det de som kommer få ha det. Blir det så att SOS Alarm inte är den som är innehavare utav 112, eller alltså det byts, ett nytt företag, så måste man lämna ifrån sig rätt till PTS, som sen ser till att man får en möjlighet då att intyg att man nu är en ny juridisk person som ska kunna få möjlighet att registrera 112.
Mm. Mm.
Hej. Då vill jag tacka Annette och då hoppar jag. I switch to English and introduce Giovanni Seppia, who is general manager of the center organization, which is a, well, I suppose you will give a presentation of the organization as such.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah. Well done. Yeah, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Sorry I got to hear English today. I'm sorry I can't speak your language. I had a full immersion yesterday night, more or less. Part of my dinner, but was not enough to make me speak Swedish this morning. First of all, I wanted to compliment the Swedish registry, because this morning after breakfast I was invited to visit the Swedish registry offices, and I was really impressed how they shaped the offices to meet the staff needs, and that is a real proof how much they really think about the personnel and the staff needs, and that is really, really good. My presentation will be on Centra, the organization I'm working for. Some of you probably have already listened to this information I will give yesterday during the presentation I gave regarding the WISIS WIGIG process. The second part will be on some statistics on the main names. So let's start introducing Centra. Centra is a short, it stands for Council of European National Top Level Domain Registries. It is a forum for top level domain managers. Primarily we have country code top level domains, but we do also have some generic top level domains managers among our members. Our members, they come mainly from the European region. Centra is supposed to be the regional organization for country code managers, but we do also have members from other continents like Canada, New Zealand, and many more. We do not have any geographical restriction in our article of association. That is why we are open to all managers of country code all over the world. We have three members categories, full members, associate members, and observers. And at each General Assembly, our members, they vote on the admission of new members. New members can apply, they just log on our website, www.centra.org, and there is a section of the website dedicated to the application for new members. During the last month, we had an application from Latvia, that is the latest Centra member, and in the beginning of summer this year, we had also the application of the Vatican Holy See. So the Pope is with us, and the Vatican Holy See, for your information, is a very peculiar registry because it just have few domain names, and all the domain names they have are used for mailing addresses, nothing more. But the structure of this registry is really interesting, and we are really happy that they became a member of Centra. Our structure goes around an executive committee that is formed by 5 members, and they work on a basis of 2-year appointment, and they steer the organization in accordance with Centra members' wishes. We also have a secretariat, a team of 4 people, a party of 4 that is the general manager, which is me, the communication officer, that is Gabriela Šitek, that is with me today to help me translating all the Swedish language, and she's also taking some notes of this event, which is that will probably be made available to our members, a technical officer and an administrative officer. The secretariat is based in Brussels, and we at the Brussels office is a branch company of the UK company, because Centra was born in the United Kingdom, and we are still registered as a not-for-profit UK company. Our output is the main wire newsletter. We publish 2 issues a year. I forgot to get a copy with me. This is the last copy we publish. We are in the process of assembling the articles for the next issue of the newsletter. I leave some copies here if you like to take some, or just write to the secretariat at centra.org to receive more copies if you are interested. We run surveys. The surveys we run are the A-level survey, which is almost completed, and it covers the registry's management main aspects. The B survey that covers legal issues related to registries, so all the legal matters. And we do also run other surveys on upon request of our members. We have run several surveys like on risk management and other aspects of registry work. We do also, what is quite interesting is that we do also run some surveys upon our members' requests whenever they need some information before implementing certain policies or procedures at a domestic or national level. So, for instance, recently we have run some surveys for the Spanish registry because they are going to introduce the deregulation. So they are going to deregulate the market of domain names in Spain. So we run this survey upon the request of the Spanish registry. We also make comments, prepare and draft comments and positions on several topics that may have an impact on our members. We have, for instance, published a comment to the Working Group on Internet Governance Final Report and other comments and common positions on topics that are of interest of our members. We do also run an outreach program that is intended to provide technical assistance and financial assistance to those developing countries' registries that would like, for instance, to participate in international fora or international seminars. And we recently sponsor the participation of 2 people of 2 African registries to attend workshops organized by the Internet Society in Nairobi. And this workshop was supposed to train these people on administrative, legal, and technical aspects. In the international arena, before I kill myself with this microphone, in the international arena, we have the European Commission as an observer. The European Commission representatives, they attend regularly our meetings, and all governments are invited to attend, upon request, our assemblies or our seminars. We have regular meetings with the Directorate General Information Society and Media, including the GAC Secretariat and the Cabinet of the Commissioner Reding, that is the one in charge of information society and internet-related aspects. And at present, we have started a cooperation with the Data Protection Unit of the Directorate General Justice, Freedom and Security for the WHOIS-related topics. We made a paper of sort of best practices and guidelines regarding WHOIS, and this was made public at the beginning of last year, And we received a request of the European Commission Directorate General Justice, Freedom and Security to integrate some comments of the Internet Task Force of Article 29 Working Party in our paper, and we are now in the process of integrating those comments in this paper, which was quite good in, according to the comments that we received by this Director General. We are an associate member of the European Internet Foundation, that is a foundation that organizes seminars and some events on internet aspects, and is a foundation made by European MPs. And we do also participate regularly in all international meetings on behalf of our members, and we do also prepare some reports to update our members that cannot attend those meetings, and those reports are available on our website for our members. Which is our long-term vision? We would like to keep expanding the dialogue among registry. We are in the process now to contact those European area registries that are not member of CENTRA, and we also keep regular contacts with all international bodies. We keep also developing best practices by encouraging exchange among registries, and our main target, and I think the main target of all the people that work in the internet sector, is to keep improving the reliability and stability of the internet through improved DNS practices. And of course, we keep working closely with all internet-related organizations. We have taken part in the CCNSO process. The CCNSO is a constituency in the ICOM process that is meant to gather all the needs of the country code managers community. And the CCNSO process encountered some problems to make the country code managers join the CCNSO. And at the beginning of April 2005, we submitted some inputs to the CCNSO process because we would like to see some changes, our members would like to see some changes in the bylaws, ICANN bylaws that are related to the CCNSO. The highlights of the comment refer to the scope of the CCNSO that in central members' vision should be shaped differently and more focused on some matters. The subsidiarity principle that was supported by the governmental advisory committee members and that says that everything that can be regulated at the local level should be regulated at local level, and only those matters that can be regulated at local level should be dealt more, let's say, at the following level. And we do also made some comments regarding the policy recommendation procedures because there is a procedure for the CCNSO to make policy recommendation, and we would like to see some changes, our members would like to see some changes in this process. The CENTRA community believes that CCNSO members should decide on fee structures, the fee structures that apply to country code, operational procedures, and also CCNSO policies. It should also be clear that global policies agreed by the CCNSO cannot bind non-members of the CCNSO, and this is stated clearly in the CENTRA comment that was published in April 2005. This comment is available on our website in the document section. Regarding another headline, that is the WYSIWYG process, we have participated in all the consultations of the WYSIWYG that were held during 2004 and 2005 in Geneva. We have liaised with the WYSIWYG Secretariat through information exchanges and participation in events. Last May, we organized an open day in Brussels. The open day was meant to distribute and spread more information about the country code word among governments and among European institutions. And the WIGIG secretariat participated in this open day. We also have participated in the two country code workshops that were held in Geneva in July 2005 and last September. And we drafted two comments. The last comment was the comment on the Working Group on Internet Governance final report that we released on August 2005. According to our members, it is quite important to distinguish between those issues that may require restructuring of the present arrangements and those that can be and are expected to be resolved within the existing frameworks. Keeping in mind always that most of the issues are local and regional and as such are best solved at national level. For instance, sometimes when you are in the internet, you hear about delegation process of country code top level domains. Center members do believe that those matters are and need to be sorted out at local level, exclusively at local level, and that some bodies that, like ICANN, are just a sort of registry, archive, or decisions that should be made at local level. So if there are, for instance, some parties that are arguing for the management of a country code, because this is something that is happening in many places, in many countries of the world, those issues need to be sorted out at local level, not at international level, because only the parties that are there, that are in that country, they know what are the expectations of the internet community, and they know how to best sort out those aspects. And we do also, Centra members do also believe that the free spirit of the internet is a milestone and is also the key of any future development in the internet structure. Some statistics of the top-level domain scenario. At the end of the first part of these statistics have been provided by VeriSign. And VeriSign publishes a newsletter, a quarterly newsletter that updates people that are interested regarding domain name statistics. Those are just statistics, so sometimes they do not match perfectly the situation, but are quite accurate as much as they can. At the end of the second quarter of 2005, there were over 80 million domain names registered worldwide, and this represents an 8% growth over the first quarter of 2005 and a 28% increase over the last year. .com remains the largest top-level domain in terms of its total base of registrations. The next three spots are .d for Germany, .net, and .uk for United Kingdom. As you can see, .com domain names are the largest portion of domain names registered worldwide level. There are over 8 million of new domain name registered in the second quarter of 2005, and the country code top level domains as a group, they count for 35% of registration at worldwide level, followed by .net. So the country code market is still growing and it's still expanding. There was a sort of stagnation during 2003, but since the end of 2003 and starting from the end of 2003, the growth started again. There are 240 country code top-level domains, and they account for 240 country code top-level domains, the top 10 account for 71% of country code top-level domain registration. That means that the top 10 country codes, they cover the largest number of registration of domain names. And we have a sort of top 10 of country code top level domain registries, as you can see, .de, .uk, .ar, .nl, .it, and the others are in the top 10. And the numbers, the statistics for these domain names, this country code, they show that the number is still expanding. Now I'd like to give you some figures of regarding the registries, and I'm using some very interesting slides that they encountered the success in many presentations I gave. Those slides were made by the Norwegian registry, and also the data that I will speak about, they have been taken by the A-level survey that sent run and that is currently updating. The registry setup depends on various reasons, and we have a sort of list of the legal status of a registry that can be classified as a private company, part of an academic network, foundation, association, government agency, telecom operator, and a miscellaneous of the previous mentioned legal status. And this is what Uninet has done, and Uninet has made this chart that is very, very interesting, and this chart takes into consideration two aspects of the domain name policy, that is, that are the requirements for the applicant and the number of domain names. As for the requirements for the applicant, some registry, they require that the applicant has a right to the name, so they ask the applicant to provide a documentation, or they ask that the applicant has a local presence in the area of the country called top-level domain. For instance, in Spain, they requested that any applicant should be a Spanish resident, so resident in Spain or in one of the Spanish territory. Or another request can be that the applicant must be an organization. So some registry, they do not allow registration for individual people, but just for organization. And as for the number of domain names allowed per applicant, the big distinction is between unlimited and limited. So until, for instance, a few years ago, the Italian registry was asking, was limiting up to 10 domain names per applicant, the number of domain names that the applicant could have asked for. And the deregulation processes are always ongoing in all the registries, and that shows that the market is getting more liberalized and more open. So the result of matching those two aspects, the requirements for the applicant and the number of domain names, shows that most of the registries, they fall in the unregulated category in the lowest square. And that means that that square means that the freedom of choice and is higher in these registries. And also those registries are those registries that have proved to be also more successful in terms of registrations. If we like to summary, to sum up the mapping, we can see that few of the registries that participated in this exercise, they find themselves in the strictly regulated category. Most of the registry that participated prefer the domain name policy with no limits on the number of names that an applicant may hold. And while the majority of those registries allows an unlimited number of domains per applicant, the degree of requirements for the applicant changes and varies. Some requires, for instance, that the applicant to document rights for to the domain name, like a sort of bureaucratic category. For instance, there are some registries that if a company asks for a domain name, they ask the company chamber, local chamber of commerce certificate, but the majority falls in the unregulated category. That means does not require any documentation of rights. Some may require a local present, or the applicant is an organization, but is still the minority. And the tendency is that there is a sort of process for deregulate the market. And for those of you that are familiar with the procedure within a registry, most of the registration systems around the world, they are based on what is called the registry, registrar, registrant system. So the registry is the archive, the database of domain names, is the manager of the country code. The registrar is a sort of retailer that acts after having entered into an agreement with the registry to sell domain names, and the registrant is the end user. According to the sent survey data, those are the numbers of registrars of the registries that participated in the survey that we ran 2 years ago. And according to the survey, as you can see, most of the registries have contracts with a number that is around 300 registrars in their country. And we do also have some registries like the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Italy, that have contracts with over 1,000 registrars. So that means that in those countries there are more than 1,000, in some cases over 3,000 registrars that they sell domain names to the end users. The survey that Centra conducted showed also that, for instance, most of the staff of the registries falls under the technical, they are dealing with technical aspects of the registration procedures, and the number of people that are employed by registries among those that have participated in the survey is an average of around between 15 and 30 people. So this is the average number for staff working in a registry and managing the registry. That's it for my presentation. As you can see, the country code world keeps evolving, and it's quite a very it's a growing market. We cannot say if it will stop, it will stagnate, or will keep growing. There are many tendency, many statistics. For my experience under the Italian Registry, I can tell you, never rely on statistics, never rely on whatever some studies can tell you. Be ready for the unexpected circumstances, because I do remember that it was the beginning of 2002, and we conducted at a sort of national level a statistic of domain names, and the statistics say, okay, you will have a growth of around 1,000 domain names per month during 2002, and suddenly in February 2002, because of a marketing campaign of one internet service provider, we received 30,000 requests. So that is why you should really be ready to cope with unexpected circumstances, because the country code and, generally speaking, the domain name market is something that keeps evolving, and this is also another proof of the free spirit of the internet. Thank you. Questions in English. Or have.
Do we have any questions?
Thank you very much, Giovanni, for an interesting presentation. You showed on some of the slides that .com is growing very, 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 have a very good growth. How do you want to position the GTLDs? Do you have the .com, the .net? But there are also about 8 to 10 new ones coming in. .post.mobi, XXX, and so forth. How do you want to position the country codes versus the, let's say, the GTLEs?
That's a very interesting question, because this is something that I always try to understand from a sort of social level. Why people they go for a .com, why people they go for a .ec, why people they go for a .de. Some studies, they reveal that this depends on a sort of national identity of the people that register domain names. Other studies, they've shown that this also depends on the marketing that the internet service provider they do at the domestic level. I think that there is room, there's space for more growth, and .com is perceived to be as a more sort of commercial top-level domain, so more people that would like to go for commercial activities that identify their website, mentally speaking, with .com. So they go immediately to go for register a .com. While there are others that they say, okay, my activity, my company is based in Sweden, in Italy, in the UK, so I go for a local domain name, because in any case, no matter what you register, you're going to be reachable at worldwide level. And this is what sometimes people, they don't think about. Because sometimes people, and this is really from my experience for 5 years at the external relations of .it, they think that if you register at .it, you are reachable at the local level. So outside Italy, you're not reachable anymore. And if you register a .com, you're reachable at worldwide level. And sometimes we try to make these people understand, but of course there are some marketing policies of the retailers, the internet service provider, that they can propose on the market domain names at a better price. And also a limit can be that, for instance, .com is quite affordable at worldwide level, while some country codes, they still have high prices on the market. So to register certain country codes, domain names, you have to spend up to $50, $100 a year, while for .com, more or less, you spend $15, $20 maximum a year. That really depends on the basic services you request, but some country codes, because they do not have many domain names and because of many, many reasons and many factors, they keep very high level of prices. So this can be a limit for this, for that country code, for the growth of that country code. Together with the other limits, it can be, for instance, a limited number of domain names you can register on that country code if you are an individual person. And other limit if you need to be a resident in that country to register that country code. Because, for instance, there are so many Italians resident all around the world. They cannot register .it because they must be a resident in the European Union. So this can be also another limit for that country code to expand the market.
Yeah, one follow-up question maybe. Do you know if there's been any research how much business it drives into if you have a .com or you have a .it or you have a .se? If I were a company, of course it depends if you're a national company, yeah. If you're a global company. But
well, Centro does not do this kind of statistics. I'm sure that at the very same level that it's running .com, they have done some researches and studies about this, but I don't think it makes any difference if you run your business in .com. I think the best is the way you market your domain name, and the traffic is because you market your domain name, because you put your domain name with some banners around the world on many websites, so this is this may have an impact.
Hello, my name is Gabriella. I'm also working for Centro, and I do speak Swedish, but I'll take this in English because I just thought I might add some extra information which might be of interest. Some of our members, they don't only register, let's say, .se, but they also offer registration on, let's say, .com, .whatever. And I know that one of our members, Poland, they also offer .com.pl, but also on the second level, directly under .pl. And they are very surprised because they see many people want to have .com.pl, not only .pl, even if the domain name is available, they still think it sounds better with .com.pl.
More questions? Someone? No? In that case, we turn to the next speaker. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. My name is Mark van Wezemaal, and I also represent .eu. My Swedish, unfortunately, is not very good. It is even non-existent, so sorry for having to speak to you in English. Nothing is more true than what for .eu than what the previous speaker said is expect the unexpected. We don't know what is going to happen on the 7th of December because that is the day that we are going to launch this new TLD. But at least one thing, if there is, there are a few things that I want to stress is that .eu is around the corner. That it is positioned as a European internet identity for everybody. Be prepared, because it is a first-come, first-served system. So, and what I'll try to do today is to tell you what you have to do if you're interested in a .eu. And .eu also offers some unique protections with a sunrise period, which, for which you have to act now, with alternative dispute resolution procedures and controlled procedures for transfers of domain names. What is a domain name? Well, I think you know. It's an easy to remember internet address for a website, an email address, but it's much more than that. A domain name has become a digital brand. It's the way you position your company on the internet. And let me give you an example. Maybe this is less of interest for Sweden because I know some companies have different brand names in different countries. But probably some of them you will recognize. These are brand names of a few big companies, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Henkel. They are competitors. If I would ask you to match the company with the brand, I think this will be a very difficult exercise. So these are the ones for Procter & Gamble, Unilever, and of course the rest is Henkel. What am I trying to tell here is that for some companies, a brand name is more important than the company name. I'm sure that for some of these brand names, you didn't even know which company was behind it. And it's something similar is going on for websites, or domain names for that matter, because some websites are already better known than the company that is behind it. So be prepared. A domain name has a high commercial value. And the European Commission has seen that and said, well, we want a .eu for a European identity, a European e-identity. How did it all start? Well, an initiative was taken by the European Commission in 1999 with a public consultation in February 2000, after which, apparently there was a lot of interest from the market, it was incorporated in the e-commerce initiative, where it said that the Commission will support a .eu top-level domain to encourage cross-border electronic commerce within the EU. After that, a regulation was created to have a legal framework. We are now talking April 2002, followed by a request for expression of interests that was finally won by EURIT. EURIT, which was created by the Belgian, the Italian, and the Swedish registry. And we now have some additional effective members, which is the Czech and Slovenian registry. So EURIT stands for European Registry for Internet Domains, and it is based on the expertise of these five companies in running registries. What is the EURIT model? Well, it has already been discussed in the, by the previous speaker. It's the 3R model. I thought we had the 4P model or the 5P or 6P, whatever the thing is in marketing. So we need also something interesting. So the 3R model. It's the registrant, the registrar, and the registry. If you're looking for registrars that are offering .eu, you can find them on the website www.urit.eu, per language, per country, and so on. Oops. Back. The URIT model is based on the legal framework set out by the European Commission, so it's not something we were free to choose. There is a regulation 733 of 2002, and one of 2004 that lays down the rules, the public policy rules, concerning the implementation and the functioning of the .eu top-level domain. It is a first-come, first-served system. However, there are some exceptions. There is a reserved list for countries, for the European Commission, and for the registry. So the countries could send in a list of names that they wanted to reserve for themselves. That list has been received last week and will be published in the coming days on the website. There will also be a blocked list, and there are names that are not allowed at the first level, never. Typical names are Nazi, which is entered by Germany, of course. There are other countries that probably misunderstood these blocked names, like in Greece, they put, I think, all the villages and cities on that list. So nobody will ever be able to register a village in Greece.eu. And another exception is the two-letter names representing a country code. So SE.EU is not allowed. All other names are possible, and no proof will be needed after the sunrise. It is a business-to-business model, so there is no direct. There is no possibility for direct registrations, only via registrars. We are a thick registry. For those who are not familiar with this terminology, a thick registry is a registry that contains, that has all the information. In the .com model, for instance, the information is sitting with the registrars, and only very limited information is available at the registry level. The term of registration is 1 year with automatic renewals, and there are protections for end users, but we will come back to those points in the next slides. How do you have to register a domain name under .eu? Well, it's simple. It's like in most countries. It's you have the registrant who wants a name, so let's say any name, goes to a registrar who sends in an electronic form. The name is registered in the database, and a confirmation goes back to the registrar. That's about it. Completely automated. The name can be 2 to 63 characters, should not be on the reserved list or the blocked list, not a dash in the first or the last position, and not a dash in the third and the fourth position at the same time, and should not be a country code. This is after sunrise. Who can register a .eu name? Well, as you can see, an undertaking, an organization, or a national person, but there is a qualifier each time within the community. So you have to be within the European Union to register a .eu. And no, Norway is not part of that. Don't blame us. Talk to the Commission.
I've had a comment on that afterwards.
Okay. There is a unique set of protections for the end users. There is this phased registration period, or also called sunrise. There will be strict procedures for transfers. The automatic renewal is also to protect the end user so that he does not lose his domain name when it is due to for renewal, so it's automatically renewed. When a domain name is deleted, it is put in quarantine for 40 days just for the owner to realize that his name doesn't work anymore, so that he probably should pay now. And there is an alternative dispute resolution procedure. What are those phased registrations? Well, it's a period of 4 months during which only owners of prior rights can register a domain name. Why that is? Well, I think you all have witnessed the launches of other TLDs where similar sunrise periods were announced, but this one should be different. There are two phases. Phase one, where only registered trademarks, geographical indications and designations of origins, as well as public bodies, can register. Again, this was put together by the European Commission in consultation with the member states. Phase two is the same, plus all other types of rights, which can be, for instance, trade names, company names, business identifiers, literary works, movie titles, just name them, as long as somebody can prove a right according to a national law and a law of a member state. What makes the approach unique? We have seen that, for instance, in .info, there have been a lot of registrations during sunrise that could not prove their rights but still got the name. An example was Belgium.info was just entered by somebody and they had to provide the unique number for the trademark and they just put in 123456 and it was accepted. So there was no control. That's where we will be different. There will be a control of every single application by an external company, which is PricewaterhouseCoopers. They are the specialists in intellectual property rights, and they will look at every application, at the documents that have to be provided for every application, and they will make a decision. For public body, it's somewhat different. Public bodies, when we first presented this to, and we thought that PricewaterhouseCoopers would also check that this or that public body would be entitled to that name, somebody stood up and said there is no way that a private company could control the governments. So we had to find a different solution. For public bodies, therefore, there is one governmental validation point per country, which we call the GVP or governmental validation point. Very unique, we think, is the full transparency of the whole process, which I'm going to demonstrate now. Again, we have these three actors, the 3R model, and we are going to add a few others, which is the GVP, which we will ask to validate everything coming from a public body, and PricewaterhouseCoopers, the validation agent, who we will ask to validate everything that comes from an organization or any other application. The registrant probably will use or can use an external party, which is the document handling agent, to send in and to take care of all the paperwork. How will it work? Well, now we have paired the registrant with his document handling agency because he could do this, he could do it himself. Let's suppose that the registrant will take care of the paperwork. So what will happen? The registrant will go to the registrar and say, well, I want to register my company name. The registrar will send in an electronic form and that application, because at this point it's only an application, not a registration, will be stored in the database. A confirmation will go back with the result of the transaction to the registrar, and the registrant will receive an email with his place in the queue for that name. For instance, you're the first asking for that name, or you're the second already for asking for that name, and a URL with a cover page that he has to download, to print, and to send, sign, and send with documentary evidence. So the next step is download that cover page. It will look something like this. It will rephrase the basic key elements of the application, which domain name, which right you were asking, and so on. It will contain a disclaimer where we say, everything is your fault, and you have to sign this. Add your documentary evidence, which could be, for instance, extract from the trademark office or the extract from the register of the companies, as long as it is an official document, copy of. Sign it, send it to the validation agent. In fact, you send it just to the address that is printed on that form, who will then enter the receipt date in our database. This is needed because you will have to send that document within 40 days of asking for the application, so of receiving the email. After the 40 days, your application expires, and it will not be valid anymore. So based on that date, we know now whether it was in time or not, and we will create a work list for the validation agent of names that are first in their queue and that have to be validated. And of course that have sent the documentation in time. The validation agent will look at the documents. In fact, they will be scanned when they arrive and they do it online. They will look at the documents and make a decision based on their expertise and on the documents that were provided. Suppose they say, yes, this is a valid application, they will enter their decision in our database, after which automatically the system takes over again, informs all the parties, and after the waiting period of 40 days, the name will be registered automatically. This is the whole procedure. Seems complicated, but in fact it's not that much complicated. The role of the registrant is find the registrar, provide him with the correct information, and that's it. Find the registrar is find the name, of course, and preferably in the sunrise, one on which you have a right. Spaces will be omitted. If your company name has two pieces with a space in it, then you can omit them or replace them with a hyphen. If there are special characters like an ampersand or so, you can replace it. You can omit it. Replace by an hyphen or transcribe it. Transcribe like you could ampersand write like E-A-N-D or in another language. In Swedish it's and or so, something like that. So you could transcribe it. These are rules, again, that are laid down in the public policy rules, which is a document of the European Commission. The contact data is important. When you are a company, you have to provide a company name because the name, the domain name holder will be the company when the company field is filled in. If that's not filled in, it's the private person who is the representative. So if you're a company, fill in the company name. Otherwise, one of your employees owns your name, and when he leaves, it can blackmail you. And you have to have a working email address because we need to be able to send these emails to you with these cover pages and also later for transfer of domain name if you would like to do that. Very, very important, you have to specify the correct prior right that you are claiming. Is it a trademark? Is it a company name? Is it a designation of origin? And so on. And you have to provide who will do the paperwork. When you fill in, or when the registrar has to fill in registrant, it means that you will get the email and you will handle the paperwork. When you fill in registrar, the registrar may do it for you. We will send the email to the registrar. When you fill in a third party, you could choose your IP agency, the ones who take care of your trademarks. They might do the paperwork for you. In that case, you have to provide third party and an email address to whom we have to send the email address. The registrar has to fill in all that information in an electronic form. He must present the terms and conditions to you, and he will be on a prepay system. And the language of the contract is also important, because the language of the contract will be the language in which you be challenged in case of an ADR procedure, an alternative dispute resolution procedure. And the regulation of the Commission says that the language of the ADR procedure must be the language of the contract between the registrant and the registrar. So we need the language of that contract to be able to print that on the in the WHIS, so that everybody can see in which language they have to attack you. The Sunrise is fully transparent, because you will have, for instance, you will have two companies or three people asking for the domain eurosales.eu. There is a German company, a French company, and a Mr. X. Now, the sequence in the queue is determined by the moment we receive the application, the electronic application. So Mr. X is the first. He was 2 seconds before the French company, who was then also more than an hour before the German company. This will be put like that in the database. And the last one, BE for BritishEngine.eu, is not allowed. It's rejected immediately, because that's a country code. Everybody will be able to look at that queue. It's like a whois, but for Sunrise. Let's have a look at, as an external person, everybody on the internet would experience such a whois. Suppose we would be looking on the 13th of February. To the name eurosales.eu, we would see three names or three applications in the list, one from Mr. X, one from eurosales.sa, and Eurosales AG. We see when they were arrived. We see when the deadline for paperwork is due, so they have until the 21st of March 2006 to send in their paperwork. And we also can see whether the paperwork has already been received. So it's also important for you, if you're an applicant, to see where your application is. And the right claim is, in this case, company names. And the status is pending in the three cases. So we have already received the documents. We are the 13th. On the day before, we received the documents for the last step in the queue. We can't start... The date? Oh yeah, it's 6, of course. Yeah, we're working on this already more than a year. So this one should be 2006, of course. Where was I? So we received this one, but we can't start validations because we have to take them in the order they received. First come, first served, you remember. And as the other people still have time to send in their documentation, we have to wait. Now, we can also click on the name so that we can see who is behind an application. Now, let's look at on the 27th of February, still before the deadline, we can now see that number two has sent in its documentation, but still the validation process can't start because the first one still has not reacted. Now, on the 22nd of March, the first one still not send in its documents, so now that application is expired. The status becomes expired, and now we can start with the second one, who will now be, in our terminology, the first in the queue. This will be sent to the validation agent on this work list. We'll do a validation. We'll make a decision, in this case approved, which automatically makes this void or not considered. and the name is attributed to the second in this queue. Suppose that you don't agree with it, there is an alternative dispute resolution procedure available to you, which is during sunrise. An applicant can start an ADR against the decision taken by the registry. After the sunrise, an applicant can start an ADR against the domain name holder who has registered the name on which the complainant has a prior right. So these are slightly different. I'm going quickly through this slide. It's the timeline of the ADR, just to show you that you want too much. How much time do I have? Nothing. It's over? Nope, time is over. Just finish this one. That's a quick.
Yeah, that's
fast. Okay. We announced the sunrise on the 7th of October, which means that 7th of December at 11 o'clock, the gates will open for everybody to send in their application, well, the registrars. They have 2 months for phase one, which is trademarks, designations of origins, public bodies, and then phase two, it's all the rest with the prior rights. And on the 7th of April 2006 at 11 o'clock again, everybody will be able to send in every registration because it will be registered immediately. In the meantime, validations will go on. Names that were applied for during the sunrise period but not already decided will be blocked and will be further validated until a decision is reached. If for a certain name no positive decision is done, then the name will be made available for the public at large on a certain date in the future. Currently, there are 508 registrars that are accredited to offer .eu domain names, and most of them come from Holland, Germany, Italy, then Belgium, France, and so on. And this is not a coincidence, I think, because if you look at the number of domain names for these countries, there is a quite good match. The biggest TLD is Germany, so they know that this is a big market. Holland is second largest in Europe, third largest. Italy is the fourth largest then. The second largest is UK. The only anomaly here is the UK, but they have always been a problem if it's about the UK. So it's about the European Union. They're always a little bit apart. So apparently EU is not really their cup of tea to talk in an English language. So again, the message that I started with to begin with, I hope that you will be all ready and register your .eu.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I believe we can have some quick, urgent questions.
Thank you. Could I ask you to take back the last of the slides?
Yes, the questions.
No, not questions, but the message.
Sounds Swedish.
The message.
The message.
Really, a member of the EU. Of course we're not, but we are a member of Europe. And I think it's kind of arrogant to say a European identity for everybody, because it's still countries in Europe that's not a member of the Union. So call it a European Union identity and not a European identity.
I would change that in the future.
Yes. Thank you.
A very quick sort of privacy policy question. What kind of information are you thinking about publishing in the WHOIS of the registrant? Will you publish addresses and email addresses and everything?
Yeah, it's a quite difficult question because you could start a whole session about this this matter. I'm not a specialist in these things, but what we will do is that for private persons, only an email address will be published. Yeah. For companies, it's more than that. It's company name and so on.
Because that ties into sort of the queue where you obviously will be publishing all the information of private persons, of the names they, and the fact that they are applying for a name, but this is information you will not publish on them if they receive the name.
Sunrise is a little bit different, yeah. During sunrise, it's open. After sunrise, it's not open. But you have to take into account that you, in order to apply during sunrise, you need to have a right. And yep. That right is most of the time, in 99% of the times, it's a public available information. So there is no privacy issue at that point. After sunrise, yes, it could be that you don't see it anymore.
Because we at least have a policy. We do publish who has a name, but we never publish who applied for a name because there might be privacy issue, business secrecy issues, and a lot of that in it.
Yeah. In this case,
I was just looking at it when you were going through your procedure.
Okay, on there. Oh, Johnny.
I just wanted to sort of follow up on Annabeth's question. As a curiosity, in long talks that you had with the Commission over the years, was there, having mentioned, the possibility to change the regulation that is at the basis of .eu and extend the .eu registration possibility to the countries that belong to the European Economic Area?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, from the very beginning, it has always been a publication with EEA, or what is the EEA relevance, as it was said. I understand that this is not my cup of tea, again. I understand that there has been a dispute with the Norwegian representative about, at a completely other level, about funding of the EU, and that as part of that negotiation or as a kind of sanction, they were put out of the .eu.